At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for today's Camp Notes. For 7/29/24, we are quickly approaching August, looking only about, 11 days away now from that first preseason game against the Eagles. Macro thoughts, we had a non-padded practice, but it was a very hot, humid, and long practice. I would also say it was chippy, with a couple of brief scuffles, some tackling and a non-tackling practice that you don't like to see. They just had one field of 11 on 11 today, which they have frequently had two. Absentees, let's get to them. Keaton Mitchell and TJ Tampa are still both on PUP. Adisa Isaac still on NFI. Evandy Rigby missed his however many days it is, I guess six or seven in a row now, consecutive day of camp. It's been identified as a soft tissue problem by Harbaugh, but he was not there again today. Joe Evans missed camp. Rashad Nichols was missing, and Deontay Hardy was missing. Deontay Hardy was actually scheduled to be at the podium today, but those are guys who had not missed a day previously. Zay Flowers returned. He was at a wedding, as it was announced yesterday, so he was back. One of the big developments in practice, Rashad Bateman left practice. John Harbaugh reports he does not believe it's a serious injury. Of course, that would be quite bad news. Now, we've heard that before from John, so we'll have to see how long it takes him to come back. Not serious can mean a week. John talked about injuries and an abundance of caution for some other players. The other guy who returned today was Kyle Van Noy. Did not see him out there a lot in 11 on 11s, but he'd missed two straight days with a neck thing, as Harbaugh described it. Towards the end of practice, we noticed Daniel Fa'alele dealing with some sort of impairment. Not sure if it's a lower body injury of some sort, using hockey terminology, or if it was just a matter of dealing with the heat. I mean, he's a very large man. We know what happened to Corey Stringer a number of years ago in terms of heat stroke. But he may have had a problem with the heat and cramping perhaps from that heat. But he was, you know, on one knee for a lot of practice where he could have been in there. So you know, Ben Cleveland was in there at right guard for a lot of that time, and it was just a little strange that he wasn't still in there, since he was still on the field and didn't walk into the locker room that I noticed. So I did see after practice had ended, Fa'alele walked into the locker room, and he had his shirt and his jersey off. He was just, you know, probably really having a hard time with the heat from what I could see there. I don't think they're, you know, taking his jersey off to work on some part of his arm or upper body or back. Possibly it just looked like it may have been a matter of heat, and he was doing whatever he could to cool off at that point. Anyway, hopefully not a serious problem. It was a close practice again in terms of the competitiveness between the offense and the defense. Once again, the offense coming back late with some nice touch passes from Lamar and others to make the practice quite close. But the defense, I think, still won by a few points on their scoring system that's convoluted and difficult to understand. But anyway, tell you about some drills that occurred all during practice. Start off, as I got there, they were doing punt returns, and they were working on 1x2 releases. Now, what do I mean by that? There's a gunner on each side of a punting formation that tries to get down the field. They can be guarded by one man, or they can be guarded by two. Obviously, the onus is on them to get down the field and try and contain, direct, or tackle that return man if they possibly can, but certainly at least to contain him. And in a one-by-one situation, there's really not a lot of excuse for them to not be able to do so, because they typically can force a holding penalty out of the guy who's opposite them, even if they can't, you know, maybe beat him all the way down the field. But anyway, in the one by two releases, much more difficult. That gunner has a much more difficult job to slip free of two guys, to not allow them to control his path. And pretty much all of the two-man jams were very effective that I saw. So Ravens, of course, very well coached on the return game. They're also very well coached on the punt team. But I thought the one by two releases were all won by the receiving team, which I thought was fairly impressive. The wide receivers working more on press releases, build that muscle memory versus a dummy has two arms. So right at the line of scrimmage, they're trying to use whatever bag of tricks they have to slip by a press coverage simulation with that dummy. And it's an interesting thing to watch. I haven't really tried to understand exactly what move they're trying to use, but typically they want to go with the one arm and go to the opposite side arm and hack at that. It's kind of like a cross chop for a pass rusher that they're trying to accomplish to get off the line of scrimmage. And I guess the hope would be that it would also kind of get the defender turned in such a way that they would have difficulty recovering and separation be created right at the line. So I mentioned, I think, on the last episode that press coverage obviously comes with a lot of risk for the defense when they do it. Watch the offensive line. Now, they did two drills today, which I thought were very good, and Coach D was in high spirits today. Lots of talk. And the first they did was the frame drill. Again, I talked about this. Forces players to get under a large iron frame that still is a fairly low height, stay low off the ball, simulates perhaps short yardage or goal line blocking. There's a set of offensive linemen that are opposite this in pads. They're more in a standing position, pretty much in a fairly easy job to stay low, maintain pad level, and drive through the opponent. But Coach D really wants to see him firing off the ball. He mentioned that several times. We saw Ben Cleveland get coached up on some footwork. Then he had a good rep, and Coach D was said so. He's pretty good, both with praise. And his criticism is usually in terms of very technical adjustments, so I think it's typically actionable. Players will respect that, of course. And I think that is one of the things that makes him a great offensive line coach. Daniel Falele, very slow out of the apparatus again. In a lot of ways, he's just too darn big for it. And even when he lines up in short yardage, he's probably going to have trouble getting the lower pad level just with his own height. So he has to rely on weight and length and some other things to drive advantages there. And you know, he'll do the best that he can, but it's not an easy drill for him to excel in. So Tykeem Das come out of it. He really kind of stood up out of the apparatus. Coach D wasn't on him about that, but that's something I really don't like. If you're in short yardage, low man wins is generally the way you would look at it. And, you know, just a player standing up is just very bad technique coming out of that thing. Coach D went behind center Darian Dalcourt. And he's been playing some guard. He's been playing some center. I'd say he's probably been playing more center this camp. But he put his hands on his rear end and pushed him out of the frame. And as he did so, he said, "That's coming off the ball." So it's really he obviously didn't like the rate at which Dalcourt was going off the ball, and just got an uncomfortable rep to watch anyway in the way it came out. And then the OL moved over. They did some combination blocks, and there was a lot of good information in there, a lot of good coaching and whatnot. Dalcourt got coached on his footwork. Ben Cleveland got some similar footwork coaching right after that. Voorhees had a very nice climbing rep. And so it means he was part of the double team initially, but he was also the climber to go to level two, make a block. And Coach D immediately said, "I see commitment there." And so it's great to hear that for Voorhees, who didn't really have any coaching moments in this day in the offensive line drills that I watched. So I think he is fairly far along. There's a little more from Ronnie Stanley in the interviews I want to get to later about where Voorhees is as a player that I think is very encouraging. Cleveland was praised for a fast combination block. Sala was in there at right guard, at one of the guard spots. I don't remember if it was right or left, actually. And the words that came out of Coach D's mouth afterwards were, be a little faster. So he had the climbing rep on that combination block. He redid the rep then immediately, which is not, they don't always do that. And coach said, beautiful, that's it. So good thing, correctable. Obviously, players really like it when advice is actionable as opposed to, you know, you suck or something like that, you know, as it would be if you're doing it. Actionable advice, obviously, is useful. Josh Jones. Now, this is really bad because Josh Jones has been having a very bad camp for running laps and having a lot of false starts. He had a false start in a combo rep drill. So he's sitting there preparing to double team an opposing, an offensive lineman who all he's doing is holding a pad. He jumps and hits the guy too early. I can't even tell you how not often I have seen that watching offensive line drills. You know, somebody be that poorly synced up with the play that they jump in an offensive line drill. But Josh Jones probably is feeling some pressure at this point in terms of what's happening in camp. And honestly, he's had a very bad camp. So we'll see how this first preseason game. I don't think it's any bigger for anyone else on this team in terms of how much playing time he's going to get this year. His practice spot is not, or sorry, his roster spot is not really in any jeopardy because the Ravens really need offensive tackles. They need backup linemen. And they really need Jones to be a good player. But his whatever playing time he might get during the season is going to be largely determined, or at least in part determined, by what he does in these preseason games, whether he's ahead of Daniel Fa'alele or Ben Cleveland or somebody else on the depth chart on the interior offensive line, or even a tackle. Could well be determined by how these preseason games go. So he's got a big 3 weeks coming up with those games. Tayshaun Manning got some coaching on his first and second steps. I just love to see coach do. Yeah, first you step here, then you step here. It's like he's teaching the hokey pokey, but he's very good about teaching footsteps directly and where he's seeing things go wrong. Daniel Fa'alele had a nice level two combo block. And in his case, it was kind of a wide level two target that he had to go to. I don't know whether Coach D set him up there intentionally or he looked pretty good on the rep, but his initial block at the line of scrimmage was kind of pushing a player to the right. And then he had to move back to the left to make his block. He did it quickly and created what appeared to be a big hole and got the good job, Daniel, out of Coach D. So that's good. One of the really interesting points of these offensive line drills was Coach D basically getting into the 14-inch sets he expects to have. I came over between left tackle and left guard at one point. He said, that's not 14 inches. And then he starts to measure it off with his feet. And you know, basically he knows what 14 inches is relative to his feet. I said, that's not. And he made him, you know, get reset to do the rep. But it's that kind of technical specificity you like to see, and that's made him very good in this league. All right, I mentioned that there was some chippiness in practice. I want to talk about that a little bit now, but I'm going to take a drink for just a second first. So regarding the scuffle, Tavius Robinson and Kadir Ishmael, the play was actually a false start where Dalcourt ran a lap for a false start. So one of several that occurred on the day. But Tavius Robinson and Kadir Ishmael got into it after the play with them going to the ground. I'm forgetting if Tavius or Kadir was the one who ended up going to the ground. But it didn't look good for either of them in terms of what was going on there. It was a very chippy kind of exchange between the two, kind of a scuffle. It continued on well after the play, so it wasn't something that I'm sure the coaches were happy about. Harbaugh stopped practice a little later for a water break, and there was some discussion heard about the lack of physical play. So you have a very hot practice. Players are trying to conserve energy. Some of it's probably very practical in terms of needing to be able to make it through practice, need to not, you know, get into a heat stroke situation. But Harbaugh clearly was not happy with something about the way practice was going. Physicality was one of the things. Jonas Schaefer actually is the one who thought it might be that. I thought Lamar had a fairly good day. We'll talk about some of this in terms of the individual plays, but he threw a touchdown to Andrews during his first 11-11 session, about a 15-yarder, left corner of the end zone after pressure had come from David Ajabo. So, you know, nice pass under those circumstances. He finished strong with two nice touch balls on corner routes. He had one interception he threw to Marlon Humphrey, which we'll get to in a little bit. But again, I think he was stronger as practice moved on. That interception to Humphrey was fairly early. And then he actually is one of the players who was key towards bringing the practice close in terms of score at the end. I believe the defense still won by a couple of points, a few points. But it was fairly close and well-contested practice by both sides. Now, that said, I still have a ton of notes here for the defense in terms of what they did. And it looks like, boy, how did the offense come so close when the defense has so many positive notes? I'm going to go through them. I'm going to be fairly rapid about this. But Tavius Robinson had a sack of Josh Johnson on which he appeared to stunt through the A-gap. And the only thing I'll say about this, in addition to the fact that Robinson got a sack, which is good because he hasn't had a ton of sacks so far in this camp, is that the defense continues to be absolutely relentless in terms of their pressure schemes and the games they're playing, the TE twists, the stunts they're running. All of those are they're not letting up on the offense, which I think is probably a good thing because they'll get into the preseason games. Certainly the Eagles aren't going to let up on them. They're gonna go nuts in terms of the stunts they show them. So blitzes and twists and whatnot. So they may as well be ready for it. Harbaugh had mentioned that he thought the offensive line blocking had been better in terms of those stunts and twists at the last practice. Did not address it today that I heard. I will say it was very loud in the podium area when Harbaugh was talking, so it's possible I missed a question during that time. Brent Urban had a sack on the very next play after Tavius Robinson on a stunt play again. Appeared to be maybe an early whistle. So I hate to take a sack away from Brent, but it might have been an early whistle in that case. I would say much more frequently the whistles come late in camp, and particularly when Lamar is back there, they don't tend to blow the whistle too early on him. Then we had Marlon Humphrey intercepting Lamar on a pass intended for Wallace. It was about 10 yards between the numbers and the right sideline. Wallace was a little deeper on the play. Humphrey was underneath. I did not diagnose exactly why that was true, but Humphrey was several yards in front of Wallace when he made the interception. So it might have been a zone play of some sort, although it seems a little strange that Humphrey would be the underneath zone even in some sort of cover three scheme. Could have been cover two or quarters or something like that they were Humphrey had already passed off Wallace to a rear defender, but it's a little odd in terms of the placement. Anyway, good pick from Humphrey. That may be his fifth pick of camp. He's just having an unbelievably great camp. He looks like a completely different player from last year, and even I would say a better ball hawk than he's ever been. I mean, that's really saying something. But we've seen him come off his own man a lot in the past to make plays on the football. He looks like he's finding the football, and he does really look like a guy who will be a very good safety when he decides it's time to move there. So interesting phase. It'll be coming up in Humphrey's career at some point. Already I'm thinking there's no way in hell he's going to be gone after 2024 from the Ravens, at least not if his season is anything like what we've seen in camp so far, because he's playing as well as any defender, and there are a lot of defenders playing very well here. So that's really, really a good thing. Trenton Simpson had at least two tackles. Now, remind you, it was a non-tackling practice, no pads, and they don't tackle anyway, even when they're in pads. That included a clotheslining of Derrick Henry near the beginning of practice. That's really not something you want to see. And so there's certain things. Don't go for the legs. Don't push people from behind. Don't clothesline a running back that, you know, you've seen any number of times, I'm sure, on Hard Knocks, them get on people for doing that, or certainly heard about from past Ravens practices. And this was another one that wasn't a good look. So he had a couple of those in practice, not both clotheslines, but two tackles. When, you know, he should just be standing people up, getting to the gap, standing people up, doing the right thing. And, you know, what's good about Simpson is he seems to be playing pretty fast. He seems to be getting to the hole. He seems to be doing some things. It's just, he's being way too physical for practice. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we want him to be a physical player, very fast and physical. We also want him to be a good finesse player. We want him to understand what's going on with the game of football. We want him to be a better coverage player than Patrick Queen was at the same point in his career, or the Ravens, frankly, should just move to a dime defense where they pull him out on third down. So that's going to be really the test for Simpson, not what kind of a hard hitter he is. It'll be, you know, how well is he able to handle the coverage responsibilities of the position? And we'll need to see. That's one of the things I'll be looking for in camp, in the preseason games, I should say. Travis Jones has been in the thick of the action fairly regularly. Defensive lines look very good. Travis Jones has been one guy who's been in there around run tackles. He had a clothesline of Henry in an earlier practice. He looked good in this practice with a couple of run stops. Haven't seen the same kind of pressure that I've seen from some other players, but he's looked good in terms of the run defense. Chris Board had a sack of Josh Johnson on a gap blitz. Kyle Hamilton had a pass defense versus Lamar and 7-on-7 coverage of Aguilar. We saw Bump Cooper. Now, there's a name right at the end of the roster. He's in jeopardy of being an early cut among the cornerbacks. And he had consecutive fine plays. He included a nice downhill arrival on Derrick Henry. It was a 7-on-7 rep, so it's not the greatest thing. And you, generally speaking, because of the way 7-on-7 works, you don't want your coverage defenders coming downhill on short passes early. Sometimes they have like a actual counting mechanism to not allow it, or somebody, you know, basically who waits to announce the point at which the defenders can come downhill. But Cooper had, you know, he was right there to contain Derrick Henry as he caught a pass. He then had a pass defense over the top in coverage of Collier, another running back, small school running back. And it was a nice, you know, kind of a swim over the top play where he might have had his hand on Collier's back, but it looked more like he came over the top, got his hand on the football, knocked it down. And you like to see that. Anytime a player can make a play from behind, it's generally a very good thing. Pepe Williams, he surrendered a 10-yard catch over the top to Malik Cunningham. Not the worst event by any stretch, but one that you kind of saw, again, you know, a difference in height there that can be a big advantage. It wasn't a highly contested catch. It was an over-the-top play, though, and Cunningham appeared to come down with that cleanly. Humphrey had another pass defense in 7-on-7 versus Lamar. It was in coverage of Aguilar. Again, 7-on-7, but it's 35 yards down the right sideline. So that play has transitioned into being a pure one-on-one play at that point. And Humphrey was just the better contested throw player under those circumstances. And it's nice to see that, honestly, from him. There will be other times, I'm sure, where Aguilar will be able to outrace Humphrey to some spots on the field or out juke him to a place on the field that's open. But it's nice to see Humphrey, when he's in the area, be able to make a play on the football, which has been something that has been the weaker component of his game as a cornerback in his NFL career to date. Deion Jennings, it's a name we haven't talked about much. He's an inside linebacker, wears number 56. He had a PD in 7-on-7 on a ball intended for Owen Wright. Let's see. Nate Wiggins, tough day at practice today for Nate Wiggins, I would say. He drove Tez.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free. TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
Walker into the ground on a 5-yard pass by the right sideline. Not supposed to happen, folks. Really not supposed to hit your early round draft pick. Wide receivers is actually a 4th round pick. Not that it matters, but you don't get real physical with your receivers at a time like that. Walker was slow to get up, and it looked like he felt the hit. Clearly, he's got a few hard hits from Christian Matthew, number 45, who's been covering him on the number 2 field a lot when they've had two sets of 11 on 11 playing at the same time. Walker is a guy who probably he's had some good catches, probably deserves some time with Lamar, with the ones to try and get acclimated to a greater degree, but not good to see Wiggins, go down on him like he did in that play. On the very next play, Chris Board arrived first on what was a short completion to Rasheen Ali. Wiggins got there second and tackled him. Not a good look again. This is a non-contact practice. If Board can hold up as the first man, you certainly got to be able to hold up as a second man if you're Wiggins. So that didn't look good. Wiggins then later surrendered a touchdown to Sean Ryan, who beat him over the top. I don't have much other detail on that play and noted in my books. I don't have the yardage, which is a shame. One guy I haven't talked about yet in camp is CJ Ravenel, who wears number 68. He had a PD. Let me confirm that for a second. 68 for CJ Ravenel. Yes, that's right. He had a PD at the line of scrimmage in this practice. So nice to see him kind of get on the board there. And the defense no doubt scores a point or two on a play like that. Arthur Maulet made a leaping pass defense versus Dayton Wade to end a series of 11 on 11. I didn't see who was the quarterback in this particular case, or at least I didn't note it in what I'm got scripted up to talk to you about. 30 yards, though, down the left sideline. Nice play by Maulet. On the very next play, Adafe Owe had a near sack on a well-thrown ball that was 20 yards to the right side of the end zone. Maulet there was in coverage of Aguilar, and Aguilar turned the wrong way for the football, which fell incomplete. But it looked like he might have had position. It was a very well thrown ball by Lamar in this particular case, and it looked like he might have been able to catch it. So Adafe Owe near sack on the play, and then Maulet probably not in ideal position to make that play, which Aguilar turned wrong on. David Ajabo had a sack of Lamar in 11 on 11 off initial pressure from Adafe Owe. So really good to see those two working in concert. And I think the Ravens, if they're going to have a good sack year, and a good sack year, I think is 45 to 50 sacks. They won't be at 60 again. I would really take the under if someone thought they're going to have 50 sacks. So if you'd like to get a $100 bet, say on the over 50 sack number for the Ravens, I'm fading your action. And this was a case where, Owe got the initial pressure, and Ajabo looked like he finished the job. They did whistle the play dead, and that case was a sack. And then Marcus Williams had a pass defense about 15 yards right down the middle of the field in coverage of Kolar. Nice play by Marcus. He hasn't done a ton this camp, but he's done enough to realize that he's a key player in the deep middle, and he's the one guy they really have who they trust a little bit with single high play. I don't think they would completely trust Eddie Jackson with that. I know they don't want to use Kyle Hamilton in that way, even if they thought his instincts were really good enough to do it. So he's the guy for single high when they want to play it. Let's flip over to the offensive side of the ball for a moment. And I'm really going to need to take a drink before I announce all these laps that had to occur. Okay, we've got 5 different laps are run. Darian Dalcourt for a false start. Nick Samak for a high snap over the head of Emory Jones. So haven't been a lot of bad snaps this camp, by the way, but that was one of the bad ones, and it went right over his head. Josh Jones, who had a false start, That's an additional false start beyond the false start he had during the practice reps during combination blocks. We think that's his fifth of camp. I may have miscounted, but there's been six practices, I believe, to date. And he's had five false starts. So not a good start for him. Owen Wright had a false start. Didn't know. I thought that might have been on alignment too. And then all of a sudden, Owen Wright's running the lap. So I kind of actually looked like Ronnie Stanley might have also jumped on that play. But for whatever reason, Owen Wright ran the lap. And then Tyler Linderbaum had a false start. I think in his case, he forgot the snap count, didn't snap the ball. Everybody else jumped. And so it was obvious that Linderbaum was the one who was responsible. But he ran the lap and actually it was a good hustle lap for him, I'll say, because not only did he run the complete field, but he came back after finishing his lap and wanted right back in there at center again. So nice to see that. We've seen some pretty lackadaisical and shortcutty laps run. Again, you know, just kind of think it pisses you off from seventh grade football. Patrick Ricard, a great lead block on Mollett during 11-on-11 run drills. It's just something to see. You know, we don't get to see that much of Patrick Ricard. We don't really get to see too much live action of him making any blocks before the first game of the season because he's not a player you take chances with. He might be much more likely to be an inline blocker when he does play during the preseason. But in this case, a really nice lead block against Mollett. I know big size difference there, still a nice block. I think one thing I've seen from Justice Hill is that he has continuously demonstrated his speed to the outside. So they're running plays that can be zone, can be stretch, or, you know, are zone plays. They can be cut back. They don't have to be. And when they have such plays where they don't, you know, force a cutback or expect a cutback, I think he's looked very good out racing the defense to the outside. So that's been nice to see. And hopefully he has another big year like last year. Mark Andrews, a 15-yard touchdown in the left corner from Lamar that I mentioned earlier with Lamar's stuff. Owen Wright had a great block of Ajabo on what became just a 5-yard pass to Owe, but he did a fantastic job. He stood up Ajabo and basically Ajabo was not able to power through the block from Owen Wright. So I would say if there's a running back who has improved his position the most, it's probably Wright. Wright, I think, could see activations this year, probably ends up getting cut, but I don't think Ali has done as much as Wright has to date. And I don't think Hill has done anything that's tremendously over what we expect him to do. And I definitely don't think Henry has done anything that's above what is expected of him by the general population of Ravens fans, because expectations are completely unreasonable for what Derrick Henry will do for the Ravens. But in any case, he's a guy who may play into the Ravens' plans at some point. It's very easy to see him as a third running back if somebody's dinged up for a game and can't go. Owen Wright would be, I think, a good choice at this point. Sean Ryan made a nice catch leaping to outreach JAD on a ball 25 yards down the left sideline. There were lots of cheers. I couldn't see for sure that he held onto that ball, but I'm guessing from the amount of cheers I heard on the play that he probably did. Nice pass and a catch over top of JAD, who was underneath on the coverage. To say that JAD might not have found the football would be something I could probably say anytime and get away with it, because that doesn't happen very often. So anyway, Ryan has been one of the guys that a lot of people like as a wide receiver, and the Ravens have really liked him for now a couple of years. They've had him on the practice squad last year. This year, he looks like he's getting some pretty significant playing time. You know, if I'm to like point out like his reps and compare them to say Tez Walker, I think they've been actually pretty similar in terms of, you know, the amount of not only reps that they've got, but the amount of targets they've got from the quarterbacks they work with. Scotty Washington, tight end, had a 20-yard touchdown from Johnson between the hashes back in the end zone. Really nice play, and always good to see somebody catch a ball in the end zone. I believe he had one the other day, and I sometimes get confused because they have Isaiah Washington, who wears number 86 and is a wide receiver, and Scotty Washington, who wears number 85 and is a tight end. So I sometimes get confused. So I can't say for sure that it wasn't him the other day also. A guy who by his name has drawn a lot of attention to this camp is Kadir Ismail. And he's doing more than that because the guy is enormous, first of all. He's let me look up his exact height and weight here from the positional roster. So he is, let's see, 6'6", 232. Don't know if he's going to move to tight end, but it sure looks like he's Darren Waller-esque in terms of his size. I don't think he's quite as tall as Darren Waller was, but he really looks like good size, good hands, good bloodlines, obviously, because he's Kadri's son. And it honestly looks to me like a guy who will certainly make the practice squad. I think a lot of people will like him to make the team. If he plays so well in preseason that he can't be ignored, it is possible. I guess he could make the team. Tylan Wallace's spot, I don't think, is safe. He could also be put on one of the two spots that return from injury at some point during the year. So the Ravens have some options if they want to try and hold on to a player like Kadir. So, I'd say he's looking great in camp. That I'd say for sure. And he certainly stood up physically to Tavius Robinson, who is every bit as big as he is and a little bit more in terms of some of the physical scuffles that occurred today. Zay Flowers caught a corner route from Lamar that was perfectly dropped in 20 yards, one circle, I'd say the left corner of the end zone. Marcus Williams was in trailing coverage and he was overmatched in terms of the speed. Ball dropped in there very well. We've seen a couple of nice fades. There's some yard line at which a fade becomes a corner route. I think this was about 20 yards out, so it's probably a corner route. But anyway, nice looking pass from Lamar, dropping it right in the bucket there for Zay to catch it. Lamar's day finished with a touchdown to Isaiah Washington. So we had Scotty with a touchdown earlier, but Isaiah Robinson, a 20-yard throw in the right corner. He ran right by Kadar Holman on the play. Kadar Holman is the guy who is the Quinion Mitchell clone. Both came out of Toledo. They're both about the same size. They both have 4.3 something speed. Quinion is a little faster at 4.33. Kadar is a 4.39 guy. Neither had a great pedigree in terms of the conference they played in college. But Holman has really been unable to get on the field in 5 years with the Packers. And I think he's been with some other organizations too, but he hasn't really been able to get much playing time during his NFL career. Quinion, a first round pick, no doubt is going to get a chance right away. But Holman, you know, an interesting story that he hasn't been able to really get on the field to date. And hopefully he'll do some things in these games coming up that will put him in the picture. I want to talk a little bit about the interviews. It was very difficult to hear responses. They had the autograph lines in a position where just absolutely screaming and made it basically just about impossible for me to hear not only other questions, but in a lot of cases, the response from the John Harbaugh and then Lamar and Ronnie Stanley, who talked to the podium. Actually, it was only a problem for Harbaugh and Lamar, as I'll get to in a second. But John did say he praised the very deep secondary and pointed out that was all accomplished and all of the swarming activity the secondary has been done without TJ Tampa so far. So they still have a player that's, you know, that's coming back, and they're happy with the depth there. He did say Tampa would be back in a couple of weeks. So never know how to take that, whether he's, you know, saying that's the earliest he could come back, or he aggressively wants to put pressure on Tampa to come back, or he actually thinks he'll be back in 2 weeks. Could be any of those. I actually wouldn't put any heed to it. But if you care to listen to it, go ahead. The interviews are out there on the Ravens website. You can actually hear how he says it, and you can decide if you really believe it with relation to things you've heard before. He's also asked about the offensive line starters and the new line being put together. What he mentioned is that the Eagles game is important. So I think in all three of the cases, and if I had to say, I think Voorhees has the lead among the three potential new players. So Voorhees really seems to have solidified his play at left guard. And Ronnie Stanley also had some things to say about him, but also it seems to be generally drawing praise for what he's doing there. At right guard, I don't think they've made the decision finally yet. As we've got mentioned and asked during camp interviews, so it's okay to talk about it now. Daniel Fa'alele has been getting a lot of run with the first team. And he had probably his toughest day of camp today with a combination of really getting some fire breathing at him from Coach D, some things in practice, including, like I mentioned, the drill with the large frame that he has a lot of difficulty with in terms of his size. But he's a guy they want to clearly make use of his size. Ben Cleveland is almost as big at 6'6", 350 or so, as Fa'alele is. And we'll see how this plays out. I think John is actually being very honest and direct to say that the games really matter. But somebody was trying to ask him a question basically to say, have you settled on Fa'alele at right guard? And he was basically answering it in that way. And again, listen to the interview, see if your take is the same as mine. Don't take my word for it. Let's move on. Lamar. So apparently, and I didn't know about this, Lamar and Troy Aikman are involved in some sort of legal action about the use of number 8 and whether or not it constitutes a trademark for either of them. And so Lamar is of the opinion that the number 8 trademark is really his. And he's used it in several different ways on lines of apparel and things like that that he's been involved in. So he said he wouldn't comment on that. Just football, please, kind of thing. And we moved on. I asked him about being in the defensive huddle on Saturday. And remember, he's in there for about 90 seconds. And there's a short break in practice, but, there aren't very many breaks in a typical practice. So basically, Harbaugh was allowing this to occur and to interrupt practice with Lamar in the defensive huddle. Lamar's first response was, I was just asking him to take it easy on us. And it sounded like a joke, but again, listen to it. See if your take is the same as mine. And he says, we talk a lot of trash to each other, and there's a lot of that. Honestly, it looked like to me the responses he was getting were more than trash talk. It was more mature talk from Roquan and Marcus Williams. It might have been more about something in particular that Lamar was doing or tipping. It might have been something else, but I really don't think it was simply trash talk. And again, listen to the interview. Lamar seems to think it was trash talk. If it was just trash talk, it should have interrupted practice by 90 seconds. Should not have happened. So Harbaugh would have them, cracking the whip on everybody to get back to line of scrimmage, get in the huddle, go do things. I think he was asking them for something specific, whether it's just what he said, that he was asking to lighten up in terms of their play, let them run their offense a little bit, could be, or whether it be say, hey, you seeing anything I'm tipping off? And in those cases, he's getting a response from both Roquan and Marcus Williams. And it may have been, the response may have been, hey, look, our guys need to have the opportunity to be great as well. We know you're great, but they need the opportunity to be great as well. They're trying to make this football team. You can't tell them to lay off, kind of thing. It might have been that, or it might have been something like, hey, Lamar, I'll tell you what, we're noticing when you look here, something happens. But anyway, I really can't tell exactly what it was, but I thought it was interesting to hear his response on that. And by the way, immediately after that huddle in the meeting, immediately after Lamar left that huddle, Lamar took off in practice on Saturday and was dominant the rest of the way, included a 60-yard, 1-minute and 20-second touchdown drive, which he scored about 4 plays, and then several red zone touchdown throws that he had in the next series of 11-on-11 opportunities. So he really looked great on Saturday's practice after that point. Last of all, Ronnie Stanley came to the podium. Now, let me start by saying Ronnie Stanley has a post-practice routine he goes through. I don't know what it entails, but he talked about stretching, and he was having a little cramp situation that kept him from the podium. But he literally probably made us wait about 30 to 35 minutes. We all thought it was going to be called off, and the Ravens press corps basically left one by one until only Jonas Schaefer and I were left to ask Ronnie Stanley questions, which is actually kind of cool because, hey, I'm an offensive line guy. And second of all, there wasn't anybody else to basically take away good question time. So we got a handful of questions between us into the thing, and you can listen to the tape if you want. But it's also much quieter at the podium because the kids had already been done with autographs and they were moving off to the parking lot, and you got a chance to actually hear Ronnie. Seemed very reserved. very self-effacing about his play last year. I thought he was very honest about it in terms of, you know, just not happy with the level of play. And I think, you know, I'm not happy for him. You know, as I've graded it, he really didn't have a very good year. But I did think he played better at the last four games of the year. I mentioned that, asked him about, you know, is the last four games something you build on? And he said, you know, maybe I played a little better, but it wasn't good enough. It wasn't up to the standard of previous years. So always good to have a player as his own harsh critic. He didn't talk directly about the contract change, but he did say, you know, he's privileged to have the opportunity to prove himself again. And you'd love to hear that, by the way. And that there's no testimonial, I think it was, or no testament without the test kind of thing. It was one of those two words that I couldn't hear exactly what he said. But it was interesting. You want a player who wants to reprove himself, even at age, you know, 29 or 30, whatever Ronnie is now. There could be a lot of career in front of this guy if he has a big year here. It might not be with the Ravens. And unfortunately, you know, he might have lost his chance to be in the Ravens' Ring of Honor. Or it could be with the Ravens if he somehow hits a very short landing strip of opportunity that's in the middle between having a great season and pricing himself out of the Ravens and having a bad season and probably retiring. Would be my guess. There's maybe some small landing strip where he could stay with the Ravens for another contract. And it'd be exciting to see that. The Ravens obviously have to be very judicious about the money they spent. So I don't think it's highly likely by any stretch. But, you know, particularly if Roger Rosengarten were not to work out this year, I think the Ravens would be in a position where they would really be considering spending more money on Ronnie Stanley to see if they could sign him again. He had lots of praise for Andrew Vorhees in terms of his work ethic, in terms of being in the meetings last season when he could not play. He said he, you know, mature, smart guy, trying to learn. Anyway, again, the actual interview is out there if you want to hear more about his praise for Vorhees. But I think between hearing the coach not really picking on Vorhees like he's picking on other linemen, Coach D, between hearing what Ronnie Stanley has to say about the situation and hearing Harbaugh's thoughts about the offensive line overall, I'm at a point where I think Vorhees has probably got the left guard job. And I'd be 90% sure of that one. I'm not at all sure. And I'd have to really handicap out what the plurality look is at right guard, but I don't think either Falele or Cleveland has it won at this point. So that's good. That's going to be a real question. And then at right tackle, I don't think we know for sure whether it's Rosengarten or possibly McCary or even Jones starting the year there. So I think there are multiple options and we'll see how that plays out. And I think he's being honest when he says the game against the Eagles. And honestly, I think he's really talking about all the preseason games are important for these offensive linemen to get a bead on where these guys are and who they want to go to war with to start the season. So that's it for the notes today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, I would appreciate it if you can toss a review out there on your favorite podcast platform. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe if you would. If you're interested in this kind of content, and like if you would as well, that always is good in terms of driving some more traffic to the podcast. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.